Policy Podcast for whatever day you're watching is what it is. It's McCallan here and Shannon there on your screen if you're watching on YouTube. And with us, the illustrious former coach, Scotty Bowman, is with us. You know what I thought was interesting last night, Scott? That the four winners on Monday's games were all the higher seeds and the favorite teams, theoretically playing away. But we talked about this earlier in the week. Do you think there's any real home ice advantage in this thing that we have going on now?
I didn't think going in that it would be any advantage. Maybe I was thinking about Toronto and Edmonton. They do know the ice. What does that matter? They didn't get use of their dressing room all the time. They shared it. So I after watching games, I said it's no advantage for anybody. They've done everything they can to produce a home sound and everything, you know, if there's a goal. So no, I don't think so. There's something to do with the bench in. I've heard it a couple of times. Maybe John would know. The bench in Edmonton, there's been a couple of whistles because the bench, when they're making a line change, it goes in over the blue line or something.
The visitor's door in Edmonton is quite a ways inside the line. There's lots of buildings that the door is right inside the line. This one's 10 feet inside the line.
Okay.
That's the one thing I would say. Now, do you think the whole world of line matching and putting a pair out against forwards has changed, Scotty? I mean, the only guy I see doing it more than anybody else is Tortorella.
It's hard now because the shifts are so short. That if you're matching on the fly, you're really losing a lot of advantage. I think maybe on the whistle, the home ice, like when you have a face-off or something like that. That's about the only time you really to match on the fly now is not like it used to be. You know, it's not as advantageous because, as I said, the shifts are so short. That you'd be changing all the time, and you'd be losing your forecheck, or you'd be losing your rush chance. It's not as much of an advantage. Only the one thing, if you're at a home ice, you can match the other one on a face-off. And teams are careful now. If they have a line that they don't want to really play against another line, they'll only put that line out generally if the face-off is in the attacking zone. They won't do it in their defensive zone because they may never get out. So that's what I notice now.
Has one team jumped out at you as looking like a potential Stanley Cup team? And I don't mean a bunch of them, but is there one team that you've looked at since the comeback that you think maybe is capable?
Well, it's just not a surprise maybe to people, but certainly the Islanders, they had tight series against Florida, but they didn't dominate on the scoreboard. But he's got quite a system going, Barry Trotz, because I've been on a coach's cafe for a long time, maybe a couple of months now. It's not no longer in, doing it when the season came back. But, you know, he took over a team. When you think about the Islanders, like, he left Washington. We know what he did with that team. He won the cup. And when he went to the Islanders, they had players like Barzal, and Anders Lee and Beauvillier. They had about five or six maybe very skilled forwards, offensive types. And initially, there was some controversy. I think he went in there and he just went in and said, I'm not interested in winning 6-4, 8-6, 5-3. We cannot win with this group. So he got them to play into a system. His system's pretty simple. When you have skilled players, and there's a couple of teams that have them. They take chances. They make a lot of great plays. I mean, you could eliminate when Gretzky was with the Oilers. They were an offensive machine. Pittsburgh had a couple of years the same way, and they were so dominant offensively. But they did tighten up enough in the playoffs, to not just try to win those 9-8 games in that. But what I see now is his team. He's got a great system where he doesn't allow his skill players to make fancy plays all over the ice, which could cause a turnover, and all of a sudden now you can't defend. And especially on his forechecking, if you watch the Islanders, that's the one team that I've been impressed with, that people say, well, they're in their own end a lot. They're not in their own end as much as they were during the season. And he's got a forechecking system that he doesn't let his forwards have turnovers. They do a lot of slide in plays into the corners. The winger slides the puck by the defenseman. The centerman goes in and does a forecheck. We did a lot of it in Detroit with a left wing lock. That was the best thing that ever happened to us in Detroit, because when I went there, is a similar kind of team. They could score goals at will. We know the 93, when they played Toronto in the 93, when the Toronto won the seventh game in Detroit, mm-hmm. I went there the next year, they could score goals. I mean, they could score, but they couldn't defend, and they were skillful, and they could score goals at will. So I think the Islanders, Bob, are a team that surprises me. I was concerned what kind of goaltending. Varlamov, he was a pretty good goalie until he got into some off-ice incidents in Colorado. So that was quite a pickup. But that's the one team. The Lightning have changed a little bit. I see them play so much. The Lightning are not into those racetrack type of games as much. So if you look at the Lightning, they use Goodrow and they use Gord, and they use them, quite a bit. Blake Coleman, they're new to that. Gord was there before, but they use them. They start off periods and they use them when they're in the head. So they're trying hard not to just play. I call it racetrack hockey. They're trying to defend more, because even Connor McDavid, I mean, he doesn't say very much, but he's such a smart player, and he said that we're going to have difficulty winning in the playoffs until we learn how to defend. Mm-hmm. And I think, and he may be talking about himself a bit, because when you're such a great offensive player, you also put your team at risk sometimes, and you have to. It's the balance that you really need. And so that's what I would say so far. St. Louis can play a really smart game when they can. I mean, they've been nipped by so many penalties. I mean, last night, though, they got, Vancouver 0-for-7 on the power play last night, which is quite unusual, because they have a really good power play.
You go back to the Islanders, Scotty. The other thing that Lou Lamoriello did is that he's always he's been through this war so many times. Sure. He's always accumulating players. So Johnny Boychuk gets hurt early in the playoffs, and they can stick Andy Green in the lineup. They haven't missed a beat with a guy who's a ton of experience and really hasn't played on a winner since Lou was there.
And their defense is big. Mayfield, Taves, Pulak.
Right.
They're big guys. And, there's still an advantage. The size factor, the way teams clog up in front of the net, you've got a little bit longer stick. You got to be careful with deflections now, of course. There's a lot of goals go in because a lot of people in front of the net. But, the size factor in their own end, Letty's not a big man, but he's pretty stocky. So they got good size on the back end. I mean, Tampa does have that too. When you look at Tampa's defense, you know, we know about Hedman, but, you know, Chernak's a big guy. The smallest guy is probably McDonough. But, you know, they've added Bogosian now. It's been a surprise. He's played pretty well for them. But they've got, I mean, I see that team play all the time. They have not a lot of big forwards, but their defense was always pretty big. But they're not playing the same kind of game as they did a year ago. You know, they're not racing up the ice and being stymied in the neutral zone. And it's quite interesting to see for me, because I know a lot about that team.
Let's take a second to focus on the Canadian teams, because we really haven't done this during this this podcast. I mean, Montreal has been surprisingly good. You're nodding your head, so you obviously
look at the size, though. When you think about it, Weber, Sherratt, the first four, Kulak's no small guy, and Petrie's pretty good size. They have one small defenseman, Mete. He's used morely in offensive stuff, but I think the big change for me watching Montreal play is the way their defense has been playing. And, you know, the experience of their people say, well, they have small forwards. But, boy, all of a sudden, I mean, the future looks so good for Kotkaniemi and Suzuki. Boy, I mean, they're genuine young centermen. And they're playing under fire now. They're playing late in the games. They're taking important face-offs. So, you know, that Pacioretty trade when he went to Vegas and picking up a good young player, Suzuki's really smart, good on, I mean, he looks like a veteran playing out there. And so, you know, that's what, and of course, you're backed up with Carey Price now in a zone where he looks so fluid, he looks healthy, he looks, I mean, he's vintage Price for sure.
John?
You know, I was just thinking about what Vancouver's going through and to a lesser extent Calgary's going through. They're still on the upswing learning how to play. And then when you play the St. Louis Blues like Vancouver's playing, that's a different brand of hockey when the Blues kind of go along the boards, isn't it?
Yeah, the Blues, they made the goalie change, and they were self-destructing a little bit on penalty kill, on getting so many penalties again last night. But, you know, O'Reilly's been a money player for them. I mean, he comes back through the clutch. They're playoff ready right now again. Obviously, Vancouver, I'm really impressed with Vancouver's power play, and they've got the nucleus of some really good young, I mean, better, more than some teams. But, you know, when you look at Horvat, he's a wonderful player because he plays every way you want from a player. He kind of reminds me a lot of a young Jonathan Toews when he first came in, you know. Just does everything, you know, power play, penalty kill, face-off. This Quinn Hughes is just something. I mean, you know, people always look at holes in some players, but his passing skills are just off the charts. I mean, he makes safe plays. You watch him on the power play. He doesn't have a lot of turnovers. You know, if the play's not simple, he gets the puck through at the net. And, you know, so, and Pettersson can put that puck in the net, you know. So they rely on those young players. They have to, like every team mostly that is developing, the tough part is getting defensemen. And that's when you look at these teams that how do you improve your defense? It's pretty hard, Bob, to get it. You know, even in the draft this year, I don't know all the players, but who's the number one defense player? There's a player named Sanderson, I think. His father played in the league. Yep. Jeff Sanderson's son.
Right.
And there's a couple in Canada, Drysdale, and but I don't know how good they are. I haven't seen them play.
John, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, just, I mean, what's the value I mean, the Canucks probably aren't going to win the Stanley Cup. I know that would be a disappointment to Canuck fans, but what's the value of this team going through a playoff series, and how much better will this team be next year because of the grind of going through a playoff round, a play-in round, and then a series against St. Louis and perhaps more?
Yeah, the interesting part for Vancouver will be in the goaltending situation because, you know, Thatcher Demko's been he's about 25 now, and he's had, you know, he's one that they drafted, and he's come along, he's a big guy. Now, what do they do with Markstrom? You know, he arguably was one of the best goalies. He got a bit of injury problem this year, but he's got a new contract coming. He's a UFA. Do they sign him? With the Vegas or with the Seattle team coming in a year from now, you're only going to have one goalie. So, you know, I don't know what they have behind those two, but
they got Mikey DiPietro. Remember the kid, the Team Canada goalie?
So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, but they'll lose. I don't know what they're going to do. It's interesting. Do they teams do not have a lot of money now?
No.
With the cap, not you can't plan for the future much because it's going to be kind of stagnant, isn't it, for about 3 years, John?
Supposed to be, unless there's a vaccine quickly and lots of money coming in.
So that's a big issue. That's a big issue with money. Who has the most money to spend? Detroit has a lot of money. Not spent.
Montreal has lots, Scotty. Montreal has lots of money.
Montreal and Ottawa, but would they spend it? I mean, that's what you got to look at. But a lot of the teams, you're right. Are teams gonna? You know, they're gonna have to be very careful business wise going ahead because we don't know. We don't know what the revenue is going to be. I mean, we see. Was the announcement yesterday about? We talk about Canadian Football League, but I mean, it's not a gate receipts. It's you know, with no gate receipts, it's like the junior hockey in Canada. Can those teams play without revenue from fans? No, I don't think. I mean, so it's not like the NHL. You know, the NHL's got the television. That's a big future for a revenue stream coming up.
Well. You know, we talk a lot about cap space and cap money and how you invest in a team and how you manage the cap. And in almost invariably, most teams do it exactly the same way. They spend all their money. and they make decisions as to what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. And those may be different. But at the end, they say, okay, I got a pot this big and I'm going to use the entire pot. Now, there are exceptions to that. Like you mentioned, Scotty, Ottawa. Who are economically challenged and don't want to spend to the cap, and Montreal, who are probably in a period, in a cycle, where they're rebuilding the franchise and don't need to spend it all, but will, I think we all agree, wouldn't we, that Montreal will spend all their money when they feel they're ready to.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be this offseason, right?
Yeah, I think, Bob, we're going to see, I don't know for sure, but the term on the contracts is going to be a big difference maker for me, you know, because when you don't know for the next few years what the revenue is going to be, these 7-year deals are, I don't know if teams are going to be willing to go like with, there's some UFAs that are going to come on the market, one in St. Louis in particular, Peter Angelo, you know, he's I think he's 30 or 31. You know, he's an elite. He's going to be the focus of the number one defenseman. He's a big player with the Blues himself. And you know, he's been waiting now for this UFA. But I'm sure they're going to want term, but our team's going to want to give term, you know?
Well, the interesting thing about that is that, you know, for all those years we heard about these backdiving contracts where you got the big money up front and then it whittled down to a smaller number. We may see, with the flat cap and with the business being uncertain early, we may see the reverse. A guy getting a big contract, maybe 6 years, with a low number at the beginning and a big number at the end. You know, teams are going to be afraid of it, but that's going to be, that might be the only way a guy like Taylor Hall or Petrangelo, that might be the only way they get all of their money over the term of their contract.
You got to be so careful though, because now when you're looking at the, I'm not surprised, but Shea Weber's really come back from injuries, and he's been a real horse for Montreal in the playoffs. But John, he's got term on his contract, doesn't he? Was he got three or four years?
Oh, I think he's got a bit more than that, Scotty. He might. Yeah, well, it's scary. But
at 35, when you're 35 though, and you're playing at a high pace of games, 25 minutes a game. It's a lot. I mean, can you still be in that first pairing? Can you still do what you did before? You know, I know. Like looking back when I was in Pittsburgh, and one of the important players that we had, the timing was perfect. But you know, Craig Patrick made some good trades. But Brian Trottier really was. He was a 12, 13-minute player, but he was able to kill penalties. He took big face-offs. He was a mentor for a guy like Jaromír Jágr. And, you know, he took his role as a third-line center. It didn't work with the Islanders. Brian for whatever reason, you know, when they were changing the guard, he wasn't very happy. I mean, you know, they brought in LaFontaine and Flatley and these kind of young players. But as soon as he went to Pittsburgh, he took his spot as a third line center behind Mario and Ron Francis. And I was there for 2 years with him. But I know even the first year, the late Bob Johnson relied so much on him. So if you get a veteran now, but if you're paying him, and I don't know what they were paying him at that time, but if you're paying a guy a lot of money now at a certain age, I mean, you want to be able to use him as much as you can. It's pretty hard. When you hit that 35-year-old, some of them can surprise, but it's a fast game, and it's demanding, as we know.
You know, it was interesting. A few minutes ago, we were talking about Petrangelo, or you guys were, and becoming a free agent at age 31. It wasn't that many years ago, guys, that you couldn't become a free agent in the National Hockey League until you were 31 years old, right?
Right.
And we used to talk about that all the time. And are you spending money on guys that are at the, you know, the ass end of their careers at age 31? Are you giving them 5 and 6 year contracts when they won't be able to play anymore in a couple of years? And it's funny because we don't think of it that way much anymore, do we? We don't think about a 31-year-old maybe being close to the end.
If they're high end at 31, they probably came in the league at 18. Mm-hmm. They probably started
much. A lot of wear and tear, Scott.
Yeah, and playoffs too.
Yeah.
This year we got, where are they going to be? This year they're going to be, we're only in the first round. We got three more. We're going to be five rounds. Not the same for the, it looks like the high seeds are coming on. I mean, the Islanders were not one of the high seeds, but when you look, I mean, 3-1 is not a lock, but it's a pretty big advantage, you know, and in the West, Vegas is 3-1. St. Louis is 2-2. Dallas is the higher seed, but still up in the air. That's quite a series. With Calgary, it's nip and tuck. So, you know, it's conceivable that when you look at the top four, Dallas was, I think, was seeded the fourth. And then you got teams like, you know, Vegas, St. Louis is even now. It's going to be interesting to see what transpires.
Hey Scotty, I look at Boston and St. Louis, who were in the final last year. I think a lot of people have picked them to be in the final again this year. How do you manage teams that are expected to go a long way when it doesn't look like they have any urgency? Because there have been times in this series, the Boston's played against Carolina when Carolina won, and obviously the first two games against Vancouver, where it looked like the Blues didn't have any urgency. And you've been through this with teams that are championship pedigree teams, and they don't turn it on right away like we expect them to.
I was really impressed with Boston last night in the third period. Oh, my goodness, they played. They were as good as they ever were last night. I mean, they scored 4 goals in less than 7 minutes, and they got a bit of a scare at the end because the shots on goal were 15-0. It went on for like 18 minutes in the third period. I mean, it was dominant. And he was using players like Bruce Cassidy. I mean, give him a lot of credit because, you know, Per, with the one who, wasn't he with Toronto for a while? Per Lindholm, or is that?
Yes, Per Lindholm, yeah.
He was on 2 or 3 of the last 4 or 5 minutes. He's a defensive type of player, but he rolled. They didn't have Pasternak, didn't have he playing. Marchand came through with a big, big goal. DeBrusk was, they were just flying. They looked as good as they ever did, and they struggled the first 2 weeks of this tournament.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah.
You know, I mean, Boston can halak. That's a big question. But, you know, Tuukka Rask has had, I don't think he has a cup, does he? No, because it was.
He has only as a backup.
In 11 was.
Tim Thomas.
Tim Thomas, yeah. So can halak did a big job with. He didn't get any work last night in the third period. And with the loss of Svechnikov, although Martinuk played pretty well. Boston's a team that 100-point team, and they slipped down to the fourth seed. But now it doesn't matter. To me, the way we're, unless nothing's going to change, you're going to go to Edmonton for the conference finals and that. But the home ice slipping from 1 to 4 is not a big factor, you know.
Well, yeah, we talked a lot about that, didn't we? When Boston came out and went 0-3 in the round robin thing, and they looked completely disinterested.
Yeah,
you know, they looked like these were exhibition games, preseason games. They were just trying to get in shape, figure a few things out. Didn't care if they won or lost. And I'm not sure we have spent for decades, for all of our lives, talking about the importance of getting a higher seed, getting home ice advantage, getting the last change, especially if you go to a game 7. And I wonder whether the Boston manager just looked at this and said, you know what, throw all that out. That doesn't mean crap anymore. Do you think, Scotty?
I think you're right, Bob. And we've seen it happen in the last decade. Teams have been able to win more games away from home than we've ever seen. I mean, they, you know, even when with the home ice, and now it's going to be, every game's going to be up for grabs. The fans can help you. We're not going to get fans, I'm sure, right to the end. And you're right about Boston. There was some players that we didn't know if they were had the virus or what, but they weren't. I mean, a big key for Boston, of course, going forward would be, what is the injury with Pasternak? He's in and out all the time. Like now he's not playing again. And is it a groin injury? What kind of an injury has he got? You know, but he's a big player for them. I mean,
it's when you get injured celebrating a goal, you have to be wondering about. That's because that's how he got hurt. He was celebrating.
Is that what happened? But maybe they're just being sure. And, I don't know why he's not playing, but no, they're it's going to be we're revving up now because when we get into the fourth games of the playoffs, now there's going to be a lot of intensity. I mean these players. I mean we don't know what it's like, but I mean they're now into the third week in the you know Bob. I mean I think there's a couple of restaurants, 2 or 3 maybe, and there's a lot of factors on. As time goes on, I mean, there's only 3 weeks gone, and they've done a lot of sacrificing. It's just amazing what's transpired, really.
John Davidson was on with us earlier, and of course, he was in the bubble here in Toronto, and he talked about how great the infrastructure was that the NHL and the Players Association had created, at least here, and I assume in Edmonton as well. But yeah, to be in the bubble for a week or 10 days is one thing. To be in it for 2 months.
2 months.
Now let's find out how good everything is, huh?
You have to wonder that teams go down 3-1. If they can, it's like the old days when you were on that six-game road trip, Scotty, that sixth game, you know, they you had half the guys on the charter already when they were playing the game. You have to wonder, if you go down 3-1, what's your incentive to keep the series?
Do I really want to win?
Yeah.
Or would I like to go home and see my family?
Exactly. You're gonna have to wonder that. Hey, Scotty, I got to ask you one quick question.
Sure.
So as you well know, I sit at home and I watch the TV and I break down the television production and I say, that was a good replay, that wasn't. And now you're watching as many games as I am. Do you do the same thing coaching wise? Do you sit and tell Sue Ella everything that's right and wrong with the game why is she doing that?
Yeah, I do a lot of that. I try as hard as I can to watch, John. But I still like the Canadian system. There was a game the other day. I don't know who was playing in it again, but the play went on for 5-6 minutes, and it was a delight to just hear the play by play and not hear all the gossip. It bothers me, the gossip. I mean, and sometimes they have two people that talk between each other. And I still have a hard time listening and watching. I'm watching the game, so I turn it way down now because I can watch the game and still see what I want to see. But I don't like to have somebody, you know, when I first did some TV, that was the one thing I used to do them with the late Don Whitman. And I think you might have been the producer. And all of a sudden I'm talking and I'm giving a thought process. I'm a little nervous. And all of a sudden, the producer's saying 6-5-4-3. I'm trying to talk and I'm trying to listen. It doesn't work. So I admire those people. But
I would never. If you were talking, I would never talk in your ear, man. Are you kidding me?
Somebody. Well, maybe you were the director, but somebody was Larry Isaac. Where's Larry? I mean, I think Larry was. He was maybe the producer. I don't know what happened, but no. When there's too much talking, I'd rather just watch. I don't need to know that Bob McCown was drafted in 1983 and is on his seventh team. I don't need to know that during the game.
1983. Being drafted in 1983 is a rather appealing thought.
Well, but the only way you were drafted, it might have been to the Army. It wasn't anything else, Bob. So.
I'd have been too old for the Army in 1983.
Oh, I'm trying to be nice.
That too. All right, we're gonna let you go. You know, we love you.
That's good. Nice.
You look beautiful too. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get a chance to see you often enough, but health is obviously good and life is good. Yeah. And we may call you and bug you before these playoffs are over again. Is that all right?
No problem. Glad to talk to you guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Scotty. There's the legendary Scotty Bogle. We'll see you next time on the podcast.